This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 163. We're going to catch up on some of the latest cloud news and talk to AC about what he's up to these days. Recorded live October 27th, 2016.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, the competitive landscape, and related technologies. Just the information. No marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Chris at LoungeFlyZ.
Or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, BI, and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on valid.nl.
Good morning, AC.
Good morning, CJ. How are you doing this morning?
I love how it's almost like a competition to change the good morning on each episode these days.
It's kind of fun, man. Makes it up. Neither one of us have a clue what we're going to do either.
I'm just going to make it up on the fly. Anyway, how are you?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
Excellent. This episode, we thought we'd talk a little bit about news and things. And before I dig too much into what you're up to these days, we're going to hold off on some of that because you got some good news and things going on that we're going to talk about a little later in the show.
Yes. Yeah, I would like to, don't want to race through that. And I'm looking forward to sharing some stuff. So how about you, man? What are you up to these days?
Oh, getting well into winter up here in Seattle, looking forward to the ski season, cranking through new features, things we're trying to build post-Ignite, and getting out some new releases. So on the whole, it's not gone totally nuts. Oh, one thing that we ordered two full Forza Xbox One gaming rigs for the office, because lap times are important.
Oh, man. I want to try that so bad.
Oh, yeah. It's badass, man. It's like we've got two racing seats, full wheels, pedals, TVs, Xbox Ones. It's pretty tough.
Oh, man. I've wanted to try one of those, the wheel and the pedals with Forza. I know I saw you guys post some stuff on Facebook about best lap times with racing one of the IndyCars at the Spa track the other day. And I was like, man, I thought I'd done better than that. So I jumped down, grabbed mine and started racing. I was like, I was able to beat some people's times, and then I saw you guys post more times that were sub 2 minutes. It's like, oh my God, I got to knock off about 10 seconds now.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. So we're getting both of those set up and having a bit of a laugh in the office in the late afternoons with a beer. It's if you can do, so we're playing Forza 5 right now with the Lotus F1 car. Mm. And if you can do Spa in under 2 minutes holding a beer at the same time, that's the line in the sand right now.
There you go. So you're definitely doing the automatic. They're not doing the manual then.
Oh, no, definitely automatic. Yeah, automatic, but with no automatic braking, obviously.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, one-handed with a beer. That's the way to do it.
Good. So automatic.
That's all class. I'd love to see Kimi Raikkonen do that.
Yeah, I've done the, automatic, but with the hard setting on Spa. I've done it on, I guess I do have Forza 5, but I've been doing it with Forza 6 with one of the yellow Dallara Indy cars.
Oh, yeah. Indies. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I could just imagine a Kimi Raikkonen press conference. Kimi, why did you go so slowly on that last lap? It was because I was holding a beer and having a good time in the car. Love Kimi Raikkonen.
That would be awesome. Did you watch the US F1 this past weekend?
I did. Yeah, I did.
I still haven't watched it.
I was stoked that the weather held up for them. Last year was like a typhoon came through. And this year was nice and sunny.
Yeah, I saw some of the replays that I'm looking forward to go watch. I've got it recorded, so I'm going to go watch it later. But yeah.
Yeah, I was gutted. I really wanted to be there. Anywho.
Oh, well.
Hey, so we've got some news. Should we get into some meat and potatoes of the show?
We do, man. There was some big news that's happened just recently. I guess the big one was Microsoft's quarter, man. They blew away the quarterly numbers yet again. The cloud is getting bigger.
Yeah, this whole cloud thing is just a fad, dude.
Apparently.
It's totally. We're going to have to change the name of the show because it doesn't seem to be working out at all for Microsoft.
Yeah, no kidding.
I jest, of course. The Q1 earnings report came in. This was yesterday, right? I think it was yesterday. Well, maybe no, it was a few days ago now.
Yeah, I think it was. Sometime last week or October the 20th. So you're recording on the 27th, but it was for the first fiscal quarter of 2017. The reported revenue of $20.5 billion, $23 billion non-GAP. Some of the big news out of this one, though, they had the Surface revenue for, that's the Microsoft Surface, it increased by 38% year over year, thanks to the Surface Book and Surface Pro 4. It generated $672 million of revenue in the first quarter. I think the funny part with this that blew me away was they said, you know, unsurprisingly enough, Microsoft's phone business continued to fall with a decline of 72%. Well, yeah, shocker, right?
Nobody saw that one coming.
No, exactly. Hey, guess what? The sun may come up tomorrow. Not in Seattle, but the sun will come up tomorrow.
The sun's barely up now, and it's like 9 o'clock in the morning.
But I think the big thing that we saw here was what Microsoft calls their intelligent cloud. That's Azure and Office 365. And they saw the revenue for that increase by 8%, with the revenue for Azure growing by an impressive 116%, server and cloud services growing by 11%, Office growing by 5%, Office 365 by 51%.
Yeah, that's commercial 365 as well. So
yeah,
a couple of interesting numbers, especially in the sort of in our space, right? I felt $13 billion in commercial cloud run rate. That's an interesting one to track just because they announce that each earnings, and that's the forecast of what they're going to earn given the current trajectory over the next 12 months. And so commercial cloud at $13 billion. I remember when I was working there, this was over a year ago now, it was, you know, it was down like in the $5 billion range, not long after I started, I think. And even in that year and a half or so, or 2 years now, I guess, since I joined Microsoft and then subsequently left, obviously, but, you know, growing by on the order of about $10 billion in cloud run rate. That's pretty cool. Like, that's pretty amazing.
It's crazy. And that, and if I'm not mistaken, that does not include the LinkedIn acquisition either, because LinkedIn is, because it's not finalized, they can't really include that in their numbers, right?
Correct. Yeah. So I assume that does not include any LinkedIn stuff yet. But yeah, 51% bump in commercial Office 365 revenue. That's huge. And 24 million Office 365 consumer subscribers. So these are, you're at home or you've got an iPad or whatever, and you subscribe to Office on one of those devices. That's what counts for that metric. So between 51% increase for commercial and 24 million subscribers in consumer, that's really healthy. Just over a year ago, I remember that Office 365 consumer number being on the order of about 10 or 12 million. So it is growing, not to use too much of a strong election buzzword bingo here, but phenomenal rate.
It really is. It's quite a testament showing like how customers are adopting Office 365. And it's nice to see Azure growing as well. I mean, it's just, I know the whole cloud business is growing, but to see Azure, to see Office 365 growing at the rate that it's growing is awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think this is, you know, Microsoft is doing this relatively quietly, like make some news about it. But I, by a large part, I don't think a lot of people are taking a ton of notice about how well it's doing, especially, you know, the Valley crowd, right? They don't care. But it's an absolute powerhouse in the cloud now. So, yeah.
Definitely.
Great results for them.
Absolutely is. It absolutely is. So what else we got? We got for other Microsoft-related news.
Yeah. Yesterday, we had a pretty interesting event. Microsoft did a new release of hardware, which even 5 or I guess maybe more, maybe 10 years ago, the only thing Microsoft ever used to do was keyboards and mice and a few joysticks, right? You know, the Sidewinder joystick range and all that sort of stuff. But yesterday they had an event for Surface, and they came out with this new thing called the Surface Studio, which is kind of it's an all-in-one PC, beautiful big screen, nice and powerful machine, wireless keyboard and mouse. And they've got this new thing called a dial, which is like a new little sort of, it's a dial. And it's wireless. But then you can also stick it on the screen and apps can interact with it. So, you know, I'm mixed on this. I think it looks like an absolutely spectacular PC, like beautiful PC. And if I was in the market for an all-in-one PC for home, I would definitely be looking at this. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, you know, everybody's like, wow, this thing is like so innovative and amazing. It's a all-in-one PC. I didn't see anything in it that was all that new and exciting and innovative other than a beautiful screen?
Yeah, so it was an impressive device. I'm going to go along with the same theme that you have here. I thought it was a very impressive device. The screen was pretty damn beautiful. I mean, it's very thin. This is rivaling what we see on the Apple side is the iMac, right? Mm. But the thing to me that I like the fact that you can tilt it back. It's really good for like a drafter or an architect or an artist. It's a cool device. I mean, I looked at it and said, yeah, it'd be cool to have one of those, but that wasn't a machine for me. I mean, that wasn't what I was looking for. It's interesting. Yesterday's Windows event seemed very much, and I think they dubbed it as targeted to the creator, and the creator being the artist, the designer, not like the creator, like the developer. I mean, I know there was some stuff around HoloLens and VR goggles and stuff, but it didn't seem to me, I expected a little bit more stuff to come out, but it was nice to see them have a play in the same space that Apple's iMac has been playing in. It's a damn impressive device.
This is the bit where I disagree with them about the creative thing. Like, I've got a very creative sister. She's a graphic designer and is probably the perfect target for a device like this, right? Except she would never use one. And the reason I say that is you go look and sit with any graphic designer or artist and how they create, they don't want to use a pen on a glossy screen where they've got to hold their arm up or, you know, tilt the device down and somehow sort of, they all use Wacom tablets and big ones, right? Like A4 size or larger. And they do that because the surface of a Wacom has a certain friction like paper and the pen has a certain friction with that surface. And it's as natural and as, I guess, realistic and what they get used to. And asking them to use a sort of a different type of pen on a glossy surfaced screen where they're going to leave handprints and smudge prints on the surface that they're then going to have to look at what they're creating, I just don't get it. I sound really negative about this device. I think it's a kick-ass device. I love it, but I just think they're targeting the wrong people. I don't think any creatives will want this.
It'll be interesting to see where they go with it. I mean, they showed it for creators, but in all the designers, to me, every artist that you look at, to me, is they want to use a Mac, or the vast majority want to use a Mac. They're used to that side of it. Now, is it the hardware thing? Is it just the way the Mac works? Is it? I don't know what that is. Maybe it is the hardware side, and so maybe they are trying to appeal to that market. But to me, this was more like, this looked like a drafting kind of a thing where you're doing like AutoCAD type stuff. That I saw the application there. But
yeah, I can imagine, you know, sitting down with clients in a meeting room and showing them through their house plans or something like that, or some sort of 3D renderings. This would be a great device for that. But just not for the actual doing of the work. Like, and to your Mac point, right? My sister's a Mac user and she would, there would have to be something so offensively, you know, so offensively compelling about a new device to get her to switch OSs and everything the way that she works. Like, I just can't see it. Anyway, I love the device. I want one for my kitchen. That's about it.
Yeah. Well, it's a toy, but you're not going to go drop the $3,000-$4,000 on it to go do it.
Yeah, the fancy one's like four and a bit, right? 4,200 US, something like that.
Anyway.
Pretty sweet device though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the screen was gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to see one in person. I haven't seen one yet. I suspect it looks like, you know, as nice as the, you know, iPhone Retina screens, but with proper color matching and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I suspect it's really sweet.
I did see that. I thought the one part of that demo that was funny was Panos Panay was standing there and showing Word and how the piece of paper was the same size on the screen. And it's like, if anybody's buying this machine to work on a Word doc, I'm like, that's not the creator side. It's like, that's dude, go get a Dell or Surface Pro.
Yeah, and let's be honest, most employers are not going to spring $4,200 for a PC.
No, not unless it's sitting in the CXO's office.
Exactly, or in a customer-facing sort of setting.
There you go, yeah.
What else you got? What you got next?
The last bit of Microsoft news that we've got here today, or I guess we got one more after this, is Skype for Business on the Mac. So this went GA, actually today, the day that we're recording this. Uh-oh, what's so funny?
Oh, it's like a unicorn. It's finally, you've seen one. It's like, wow, Skype for Business on a Mac. Oh my God. It's only like 8 years late.
Well, this one we actually are seeing. It's been the last two or three builds that I've been working with Skype for Business for Mac. They've been pretty stable. I've been pretty pleased with it. But it's finally here. I did notice that. I guess I'll have to go grab this and install it. But I couldn't get to any of my voicemails with the client that was right before the RTM. I still had to grab them for my email. But
I think the last version was Link 2011. So maybe 8 years is a bit rich. Maybe it was only six. But it's actually really solid. I've been using the preview for a while and I've upgraded to the latest version and it's been pretty good. Like, I'll give them credit where credit's due, right? It is actually a decent client now and much better than the Link 2011 client, that's for sure.
This works.
But, you know, I poo-pooed them on the show a while back about launching a Skype for Business client with no ability to start a chat with somebody. And it was just meetings only. And I was like, what are they doing? But Turns out they've added all that now, which is much nicer. And it's a pretty sweet client. It's at least on par with Windows. But I thought it was great. You know, in the article that we will post in the show notes, it says, we're pleased to announce da-da-da-da-da. It's available for download. The client, edge-to-edge video, yada, yada, yada. The result is a great first-class experience for Mac users. And I was like, first class? It's like, dude, the Mac client was the last to board the bus and they're being made to stand at the front by the driver because it's taken them so long. Like, you know, you feel like that. You definitely don't feel like a first-class citizen in this regard right now. Let's put it that way.
No, I agree. It's funny.
I love ripping on them, but it's actually a decent client, so... Yeah. Well done.
Hey, the last bit of Microsoft news that I did want to share is that a post came out about a week ago from Docker to where we talked a lot about containers recently. We talked a lot about Windows containers. Docker has a thing called Docker Labs that they launched back in May of 2016 of this year. And they got a lot of interest for it. And what they've done is just recently they've added a lot of stuff. They have a total of 22 labs to choose from beginner tutorials to more advanced ones. And they've added quite a bit of stuff now around using containers, Windows containers with Docker. There's other stuff in there too with like Node.js and security tutorials and stuff like that. But the Windows containers stuff is the stuff that recently just got added. If anybody's interested in going taking a look at that, we will have a link to the post in the show notes.
Yeah, those look cool. I'll have to take a look through those.
Pivoting to Google
a little bit. Yeah, Google came out with a smart monitor thingy, kind of like the Surface Hub from Microsoft, you know, the big stand-up 80-inch screen. They launched this new thing, like a new digital whiteboard type thing that looks awfully competitive to the Surface Hub, except from Google. It's called the Jamboard, which is a 55-inch 4K digital whiteboard on wheels, so you can cruise between different meeting rooms and all that sort of stuff. And it's basically, you know, like real-time collab type stuff up on a big board for documents and all that sort of stuff. You know, being able to interact with, you know, sheets and slides and all that sort of stuff, annotate them, do all that sort of stuff up on a big screen. And it's a $6,000 cost. So I think that is a lot less than the Surface Hub. The 55-inch Surface Hub, $9,000. And this is $6,000. So maybe we'll see a bit of competition between Google and Microsoft on these big screen meeting experiences.
Mm. I've only seen them used in like demos and I've never seen them used in like the real world in the wild, but also not in corporate America. So I wonder how many people are actually using these. It seems to me like an edge device.
Yeah, there's a lot of them sitting on senior Microsoft people's office walls.
Oh, well, I'm sure. I mean, outside of Microsoft, I mean.
I'm with you. I'm not sure how many there are out in the real world either. I don't think we've even heard numbers from Microsoft about that, but there's plenty on the office walls at Microsoft, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, one of the things they can use them for is this new thing that Google has added to their G Suite. I can't believe they call it that. But it's very awkward. That's the Google Docs Sheets and Slides. They now have an ability for when you add a comment to something inside of one of those different apps, you can actually set it up as like a task for someone to take care of an issue or whatever. You can drop a comment in and then assign it to one of your coworkers. They can see what you're referring to and address it right then and there instead of just adding their names or having to do it any other different ways. It's a pretty cool little offering, pretty cool little addition to the Google Suite.
Hey, so last week, I don't know if you noticed, but the internet disappeared for a while.
I noticed. I really know. And it wasn't even so much the internet disappeared, it's parts of the internet disappeared.
Yeah, there was a massive DNS, DDoS attack, and a whole bunch of internet sites like YouTube, Twitter, and most importantly, GitHub went offline. So that was pretty painful. It was an attack on the DNS system, and I think most of our listeners understand what that is, but it's basically the internet phone book, right? You look up a name and it tells you where to call and go find the website. So the websites weren't actually down, but the DNS system of a particular provider called Dyn, D-Y-N, was offline, and that meant you couldn't look up addresses and couldn't get to the websites that were affected. Interesting thing here is that the attack was all coordinated through the cloud using these hackable Internet of Things devices, and most notably webcams and devices with chips from one particular manufacturer. And it turns out these chips have got root usernames and passwords in them that are well known and unchangeable. And so this hacker crowd scanned the internet, found a whole bunch of these devices, infected them with malware, and then when at a predetermined time attacked the Dyn DNS system.
One of the things that was kind of funny about this too is that they tracked it back to a certain Chinese manufacturer that had had a bunch of webcams that were out there, and someone had figured out how to hack these different webcams and to pull these things down, install malware, and just unleash this ridiculous botnet against them. The funny part about it, one of the funny things I thought in retrospect of this, when they figured out that it was this, a good portion of it came from these webcams, this Chinese electronics company, which they're going to luck out here because I can't pronounce the name of them, so we won't say their name here. I could easily be pronouncing some other company when I try and say it. But the company's like going, nope, it wasn't us. It wasn't our webcams. It's totally fine. Our webcams are fine. But then like very soon after that, they come out and they say, oh, by the way, we're issuing a recall on all of our webcams. So like, it wasn't us. It wasn't our webcams. But if you see them, we actually need those things right back.
Yeah. It's like, these are not the webcams you're looking for. But if you've seen them, let us know because we want them back. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was pretty horrific, and lots of people ended up going home because they couldn't do their job, which it's kind of interesting, isn't it? That a few things like this go offline and the world grinds to a halt.
Yeah, it pissed me off. It went offline around 12 o'clock noon, my time, and everything started, the sites that I needed that day all of a sudden came back around 5 or 5:30. And it's like, really? Now that the day's over on a Friday, now I got nothing done this afternoon, but really just I got incredibly agitated all afternoon. And
yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Exactly. It was curious. I think we'll just see more and more of those.
You got to think that, you know, when all these different hacks and stuff happen with like people hacking into like the Windows and for years, then you saw things, it kind of woke people up and they figured out how to harden their software and their networks and stuff, and things got a lot better. And we're not seeing that with like the backbone of the internet. So hopefully this stuff would make things a little bit more hardened and secure, and or at least have ways to protect and fight back against this. But so far, not really.
Yeah, you see these lists of usernames and passwords and they're hilarious. Like username root, password root.
Oops.
Well, that was just a matter of time. Yeah. Anywho, so on to greener pastures and a bit more positive news. You've been working on a bunch of new stuff in your own professional life. And at the beginning of the show, we sort of alluded to talking a little bit about that. And so you're making some changes. And for those listeners, don't worry, we're still going to do the show. That's absolutely a given. But AC's been working on some stuff in his own sort of professional life that we thought we'd chat about, because it's pretty significant changes for you coming up, and very exciting news. So do you want to tell everybody about it?
Yeah, I appreciate you letting us use the part of this episode to talk about this a little bit. But so the gist, I mean, for people who are familiar with who I am, I mean, this isn't going to be too much of a surprise, I would think. But for those of you who don't know who I am, over the last decade, I've spent the majority of my professional life around like technology education. So training people in different ways. I started as doing contract training for a company, or as an employer, full-time employed trainer for a company. Then was a contract trainer, started a training business called Critical Path Training for 4 years. I ran with Ted Pattison. I sold my interest in that to him back in 2013, and he's still running it strong. And then after that, I was doing more training stuff, mostly as a contract trainer and doing on-demand classes for Pluralsight. But one thing that in the last few years, I've kind of, I wouldn't say it's floundering, but I've just kind of explored different opportunities of different things I'd want to do. And I thought that I had kind of nailed it. I thought I had a pretty good idea of what I was going to do over the last few years. And we can talk a little bit about this in a bit, but you know, you and I had started a little startup and gave it a go. And then I kind of gave it a second wind over the last few months. But I guess in the last 2 months or so, I've kind of had this reflection looking back at, you know, what do I do well? What do I get my energy from? What do I love to do? And I kind of came to the conclusion with talking to a lot of close friends, including you and I sat down and talked a lot about this a couple times. And I think I just kind of looked at myself and said, you know what? I love to learn new things and I get my energy from helping other people understand and learn new things. And, you know, I have a knack for doing it. So why the hell don't I just do that? So going forward, I guess if there's an announcement here, I've started a new site where I'm going to continue to create video-based, you know, on-demand video training courses, mostly targeted to developers, because that's my audience. So same stuff that you've seen me do in the past, but I'm going to host it myself. I'm going to launch it myself. I'm going to sell it myself. I'm not going to go through a third party to do it like I've done in the past. I want the control over it. And so that new site is called Voitanos, Voitanos. You just go to voitanos.io or go to the show notes or just my blog. You'll see a link to the logo and everything, a logo and a link to the site where you can learn a little bit more. There's two classes I'm working on right now. One of them should be done later this year or maybe early next year at the worst. That's the gist of it, man. I'm focusing on video-based training, and that's what I want to do, and that's the only thing I really want to work on now.
Yeah, well, so this is we've spoken a bunch about this over the last, I guess, 6 months or so, 9 months or so. You know, we kicked off Curb a number of years ago as a kind of a side project, honestly, as you know, that we wanted to get off the ground around managing Azure VMs, and you know, I went back to Microsoft and got busy there, and you had a day job and all that sort of stuff as well. And for me, this is a really exciting moment in time for you because you're kicking off a new project that is your passion and what you're internet famous for, I guess, for want of a better word, right? It's what a lot of people know you for, but it's what you're really, really good at. And I'm very excited for you doing this and getting back to your roots, I think, so to speak, and really leveraging where your passion really is and what you're really good at. And I think it's a great move. Can't wait to see what you come out with. But it's kind of interesting. This is not your first rodeo in this regard. You know, you did Critical Path Training a number of years ago, and you've been a Pluralsight author for a little while. So I guess, why are you doing it on your own this time? What's different about this time? Like, why branch out on your own?
Well, I mean, it's a good question. And I struggle with this a bit. I mean, I've done a couple different interviews about this as well. I mean, if you want to go back, there's a podcast called Startups for the Rest of Us, startupsfortherestofus.com. And I did an interview, I think it was earlier this year or late last year. It was their episode 236, where I talked about making a full-time income off of being like an independent contractor, independent instructor. And I've written articles, I've written books, or I've been a participant in writing books before. And when you do that, you usually are working with a publisher. But when you work with a publisher, you have to follow their rules. You have to follow their guidelines. You have to follow their style, their timelines, and just you have to work within their box. The same is true if you're going to be publishing content yourself. If you want to work with someone like I worked with Pluralsight, it's a great company. They've got a great offering as a consumer. I love their service. But you have to work within their model and you have to work within the way that they want courses to be deployed and to be launched. And you have to go through an approval process and with an editor, and you have to make sure that your course doesn't step on other people's toes. And it's been a great place to be. But honestly, there's a couple reasons why I wanted to do it on my own. One is the creativity side. I've got some ideas on how I think that people can learn that are new from the way that we've done it in the past. I don't want to share too much of that right now because, frankly, that's going to be coming down the road. Right now, I just want to get a revenue stream going so that I can be able to afford to spend time on this new kind of training idea that I have. So I'll pump that discussion for now. But the other side of it too is that one thing that I am interested in is the development of working with customers or the development of working with students and trying to help them, you know, what's the best way for them to learn? And when you work through other providers, such as like a Pluralsight or any of these other ones like Udemy or Lynda, you don't have direct access to your customers. Like if I wanted to do something and work with you, and I know that you have, you know, these characteristics about being a developer and SharePoint, I know you're in these places, I don't have a way to really to reach out to you to somehow get my message to you. But and while I do have that ability, I have no way to see how does that convert? Is that effort actually working? And so in the marketing terms, I want to own the channel. I want to be able to foster my own leads, nurture my own leads. I want to be able to, you know, when someone says that the first course that I'm working on that may not be too much of a surprise to people is going to be about mastering the SharePoint framework. And I know SharePoint developers, I know how to talk to them, but I want to be able to, this course is going to be massive. I want to not only have a first look for people to be able to look at the course like very soon and not wait till the whole thing is finished, but I want to be able to update it and keep adding to it over time. And people who buy it today will get access to the exact same content and new stuff down the road. So you buy it early, you get a better value. But down the road, if you come in there in about a year, you'll look at it and say, wow, this class has got, you know, 50% more things or updated things based on what Microsoft has shipped. That's just one. But I mean, I think that today, too many times we see courses that are published and that are tied to a specific version. But in this evergreen world that we live in a lot of this cloud-related stuff, Azure, Google, Amazon, Docker, SharePoint, all these different things, they keep changing. And there is, if I ship a course on like the SharePoint framework in December, and it's based on, let's just say that they go GA, I think they said something at Ignite where they were going to be final with the current version that they have either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year. I'm not sure, I can't remember exactly when it was, but let's just say it's December the 31st is when they're supposed to be going live with it. If my course goes live on January the 1st with that version, and then they add a bunch of new features, you shouldn't have to come find a new course from me to do that, or find a new course in Pluralsight to do that. You should just be able to go back to the same course and say, oh, look, here's new stuff or here's updated stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It seems like the training industry is kind of like, they haven't really evolved their model. It's sort of like the book industry, how you contact an author, you contract them to write a book, they write the book, they deliver the book, and then that's it, right? But the model of cloud software has changed, and they don't really seem to be adapting the model to take advantage of that or to keep up pace with that, I should say. So I'm really excited about the way you're approaching this of saying, hey, look, this is more like an evergreen model, and it's not going to be a big bang point in time kind of release. It's going to be a multi-release, incremental updates, all that sort of stuff over time. So I'm really interested in that because it's, like I said, I think the industry hasn't really kept pace with what's happening in the rest of the industry. So plenty of room for innovation there.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, so here's the way I'm approaching it. SharePoint framework is going to come out, right? And it's in developer preview right now. I think today they're on drop 5 or 6 or something like that. Mm-hmm. My goal is to have this course out and available no later than sometime in December of this year. So in the next like 2 or 3 months, but it's not going to be the final version of the course. As they release more stuff, I want to go in there. I want to update it. But hey, look, if you come in, you want to be able to get a preview of the class today, even though I say it's not done yet, then I want to sell it to you for say 50% off or whatever, something like that. I want to give you a discount, give you an incentive to do an early access. But what that allows me to do as well is to collect feedback from you. I want to see what thoughts do you have and things would you want to see changed with a course that I don't know about just yet, or that I don't, maybe that there's a direction that you want to see things go in, or there's a topic that we want to get into more depth on. I don't want it to be like a book, like you said. I don't want to start working on it, say today, and even though I write a chapter today in late October, you won't be able to see the whole thing until June of next year, because that's when I wrote the last chapter and went through the editorial process. So this is going to allow me to be a lot more nimble and to, frankly, I think it's what me as a consumer, as a consumer who wants to learn something, this is the way I want to be able to learn. I want to be able to get the latest updates, and I want it to be notified when, hey, there's a new version or there's a new topic, or, hey, I want to be able to see in the video that as the author, I can see that people are rewatching one section over and over and over. And it must mean that, oh, maybe I'm not explaining it well enough, or maybe it's not as clear. And so I can go in and update that video and change and say, well, let me go through and explain it a different way and let me break it out more. And based on people's viewing habits, you can actually see that stuff. And it's the software that I'm using to do all that stuff. It gives me all those analytics. So it's exciting. I mean, it's being able to, maybe there's some things that I want to give away for free and I don't want to charge for and put it behind a paywall and have it be part of the same platform. So
yeah, you kind of master your own destiny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. So if people want to get involved, interested, sign up, keep up to date with what's going on Voitanos' side of the house? Where do they go and what do you recommend they do?
So today, if you go to voitanos.io, that's VOITANOS.io, there's a landing page up there. There's a short little 3-minute video that where I'm giving you the pitch of why it's different. And then I've also got links to two other pages, the two other courses that I'm working on there. One is the SharePoint framework. That'll be first. And then the second one is, I'm calling it Grasping the Non-Microsoft Development Toolchain. It's just essentially all the stuff you have to know to get ramped up on the SharePoint framework, like Node and Webpack and module loaders and TypeScript, but not deep dives. You want to know just enough so that you can be productive. That course is going to come after the SharePoint framework. It might seem like it's a little bit backwards, but I think that people are looking for the SharePoint framework stuff first. So I'm going to do that one. And I think I can do that one a little bit faster. And that's why I want to do it first. But those two things, you go there. There are forms there where you can sign up to get on my mailing list for those things, to get informed of updates. Don't worry, I am not going to spam you. I'm not interested in sending you a bunch of email that you don't want. So I'm only going to send it to you when there's an update or there's something interesting and relevant. So I'd ask that you just give me your email address, sign up to one of the forms that you see that pops up on the site. I'll keep you informed of what's going on. I'm going to give those people who sign up to it special deals, early access, special promotions, and we'll go from there. I'm on, the site's got a presence on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, GitHub, to where I'll be posting a bunch of stuff there as well. So that's the best place. If you got an idea for a course, shoot me an email, shoot me a tweet, contact me through the site. I mean, I've tried to make it as easy as I can to communicate with us and stuff. So yeah, I'm just going to make it, that's really it. That's the best place to go grab all that stuff.
Awesome. Well, I'm very excited for you. I hope it obviously goes extremely well, as I'm sure it will. And I'll be looking forward to seeing all the good content that you come out with and all of that. Well, no doubt we'll catch up again about this in due course and discuss your plans as they come together around the launch and of more content as well. So I hope it all goes super well.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And it's exciting, it's energizing, and I'm already enjoying getting back into starting to build courseware. So yeah.
That's cool. Nice.
Hey, so finishing up, why don't we finish up the episode with a couple of picks?
Sounds good. You want to go with the space theme?
Yeah. Is the sky blue usually? Yeah.
It is over here in Florida. Trust me.
All right. I think your one is pretty sweet. So we'll go last with that. I'll go first.
Okay.
Elon Musk did a AMA on Reddit and it was pretty good. He said, "I am Elon Musk. Ask me anything about becoming a spacefaring civilization. And he answered a bunch of questions. You know, he wasn't on for a really long time, so that was a bit disappointing. But he had some really good answers. He's talking about, the new spacecraft they're going to have to build to get to Mars, all this sort of stuff. So geeking out about space stuff, Elon on Reddit was a thing of beauty to watch. It was great.
Yeah, I love the fact that he focused, too, just on the SpaceX side and didn't go with the Tesla stuff. So
yeah, in fact, they gave specific guidance to not talk about that stuff. So it was just really wanting to focus on the SpaceX side of things.
Yeah, that's cool. He's fascinating guy. And I love what SpaceX is doing and the direction they're going. And I mean, you got the mishap here and there, and it'd be interesting to see what they figure out was the final cause of the explosion that they had down at the Cape a couple months ago. But I saw even news today that they look like they're going to have it certified and use the new landing pad or the new launch pad that they've been working on for a couple of years now to maybe even have a launch in December since the other one got destroyed.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, they've had to put that one a bit further forward.
Yeah, this is the, I think it's 39B or 39A is the one that they got, which is one of the two pads they use for shuttle and Apollo missions.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool to watch them launching from there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so what do you got? What are your picks?
Man.
Or your pick.
This one's fun. So keeping with the space theme, the Smithsonian Institution did a digitization, they did a 3D scan.
a 3D scan?
Yeah, exactly. Of the Apollo 11 command module, the Columbia. So these are the living quarters for the 3-person crew during most of the first manned lunar mission in July of 69. And it's Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, Michael Collins. This was incredibly cool because what they did is they went in with a 3D camera and they recorded the whole thing so that you can You can launch the camera, you can spin it around and see everything inside of it. But the cool, one of the neat things about this, when you go to the link that I post on the site here, when you scroll down, you'll see that there are actually 3D models, some raw data, render-ready modules, and 3D print-ready modules that you can go grab to go print out some of these things, like on your 3D printer, to go have a play with.
Stop it.
My wife is in the room while I'm recording this right now, and I know she's rolling her eyes going, crap, we're going to have to get a 3D printer. I know he's going to ask me for a 3D printer now. Oh, yeah, I'm getting the thumbs up and thumbs down right now of rolling eyes and saying no 3D printer.
Somehow we have to make this happen.
It's really cool.
There is a model here, a 3D print ready model for a control panel knob. I want to print like 100 of them and just replace all the knobs on our stoves and gas top and all that stuff at home with Apollo control panel knobs. That sounds like a great thing to do over a long weekend while the wife's away, and she'll come back and be like, what have you done to our house?
Oh, I want the control panel section where you have like the switches with the little protectors on the sides so you don't bump it. I want to replace my light switches on the walls with those.
Definitely. this is great. I love it. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of Kerbal Space Program people that print these guys out and make, you know, control panels with real switches and stuff based on them that work for our Kerbal Space Program. Majorly nerdy.
Yeah.
Hey, well, great show. Thanks for those picks. That's like along the space theme, that couldn't have been better, really. Apollo 11 is like, you know, the pinnacle of space nerddom. So that's pretty sweet.
Absolutely.
Another good week. Lots of news, lots of exciting news in your life as well as in the wider cloud world and things. So we hope everybody's enjoyed this show. And we had a couple of interviews over the last few shows. So back to a bit of news now. And we'll try to keep a bit more pace with what's going on in the news and intersperse interviews periodically as we go, just to make sure we're keeping up with what's going on in the wider world.
Sounds good. Hey, man, good chat again today. And thanks for letting me share my news today, too. I appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Yeah, take care.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes for each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us. Participate in upcoming interviews and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.